futurist Morris Misolowski, who is going to give us several things that just won't exist in 2030. Isn't that right, Morris? How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks, Phil.
What's not going to exist in 2030, Morris? Do the good news first or bad news first?
Oh, look, it's all good news, I think. It just depends on which way you look at it. There's lots of stuff, Phil, that we take for granted now that's disappeared out of our life. We've spoken about it before. You know, the old corded phone, answering machines. There's all sorts of things that we live without now that we don't think twice about. And we're very much on the cusp of doing that again. One of the most interesting ones for me is the fact that we're finally going to do away with all our keyboards, our mice, and all the other things we use to interact with technology. And the new iPhone X or 10, whichever way you want to go, is really one of the first pieces that's going to do it for us.
Is that really going to catch on? We've talked about this one, of course, and some people are saying, blimey, that's out of left field and it's a cul-de-sac.
They're not using keyboards and mice? Yeah, absolutely. It'll catch on
soon. No, the iPhone X.
Oh, look, the iPhone X may or may not. It's interesting. I actually read the first review today on it. The reviewer that did the very, very first review of the very, very first phone got his hands on the X a week ahead of everybody else, and he's done his first review. He said that the phone itself was very good, it was large, the screen was great, but he made the same comment that we've just made, and that is that it's a great phone, it's not evolutionary, but when we look back on it from about 5 or 10 years from now, we will say that it was the first significant change, because the phone itself is geared very much towards you not touching it in lots of ways. It looks at you and opens up the phone because it recognizes your face. You speak to it to dial. You ask it to do things for you. It's very much centered around not using keyboard, not even having to use fingers, just by being able to speak and look. And even though he admits, and he says quite openly, that it's not the greatest advance, it's certainly the first phone that's pushed very heavily down that road.
What is needed, you know, what does scientists and people who know what they're talking about feel that we need that's still in its infancy?
In the way of phones or the rest of it?
This thing symbolizes. I mean, they're obviously looking at some direction way in the future.
Look, what we want is not so much what we need, but what we want as humans, we always do, is we want things to work really easily. We want them to be effortless. Technology's been terrific, but we've really had to understand that. Going back to the 80s, you had to know DOS and you had to know all kinds of commands. We had to be able to type. Then the mouse came about, and that didn't come about till the mid-80s, late-80s, depending on whether you were a Mac or an IBM person. And that was a different way of engaging. So we've always had to work really hard. I know it's not toiling with digging ditches, I get that. But we've had to work hard. It's only really the last 5 years that most people have forgotten how difficult it is to install software in computers, how often it used to break down, how often you used to have to get people in to fix it. Those things are almost gone from our lives. And the next big iteration in this is really where we've forgotten. It's like electricity and gas. For many of us, we just take it for granted. We turn it on, it's there, and we do stuff with it. That's still the holy grail for technologists, for scientists, for other people, is it becomes so good at what it does, we've forgotten it's even there.
All right, let's move on to this 2030 thing. I'm just punting here. Is one of the things that's really going to take off super-duper battery power, obviously with reference to the cars?
Yeah, it will. And what we're seeing now is this notion that we believe that we will have limitless batteries within about 5 years. Now, I'll believe when I see it too, Phil. I know we've been promised this before. But really, again, if we're cold, hard, and clinical, every phone has gotten slightly better. Not enormously better, but slightly better. Every year we get slightly better at battery storage. Remember again that we're driving these things really, really hard. Our new phones now are doing things the original iPhone didn't even begin to think about. We didn't use apps the way we did. So I'm not saying that we're great with our batteries, but we're far better than we were. And so within 5 years, we believe that we will, in fact, be limitless. In fact, Disney Corporation, good old Mickey Mouse Disney Corporation, last week put out a patent. This patent says that you will be able to charge your battery anywhere in a room that has Wi-Fi, and simply that Wi-Fi connection will be able to charge it. We've seen things similar to this in the past, I feel. So there's been a couple of patents similar to this, but this was quite a loud announcement. So who knows? 5 years down the track, that may be a possibility.
Well, it is one of these things. I mean, the battery's been around for ages and ages.
Yeah, they have.
And it is one of those things that we can actually say this does have a new level to get to, right?
It absolutely does, and it's so imperative because these devices, of course, are not plugged in. They have no source of electricity or of energy, so something inside of them needs to do it. Now, what about good old automatic watch? I still love that, you know, the watch that used to wind itself when you moved it. So I don't think that's going to be part of our future, but we've solved it before as humans. You know, we've gotten around that problem. I'm sure we'll do it again, and there are lots and lots of people that are doing it. The Tesla motor vehicle is an example of how battery life is extended because it's based on that. When you take the car apart, the bottom bit is literally just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of batteries strapped together.
Yeah. Well, 2030 is only 13 years away. That puts it into perspective. What aren't we going to be seeing?
So I've talked a lot about what, in this piece that I put together, about what it is that we will do in 2030 that we can't do now. Things around medicine are most interesting to me. The notion that the x-rays, the blood tests, many of the things that you and I hopefully don't have to do, but should we be ill, our doctors want us to do, are stationary pieces of information. In other words, when we do that test, this is what our body is like at that moment. And that's what we've had up until now, and we've made really good use of that. But we're now getting into real-time medicine where our body continuously sends messages. So it's not just that minute, it's literally the entire day that you live, or the week, or the month, or whatever it is that that particular piece of testing is being done for. And that's going to come about in the way of us swallowing little tablets or nanobots into our body. And again, patent land, which is where I love to spend a lot of time. I know that sounds strange, but in patents you can find all sorts of things that people think they've invented you may not see for a while. There was a patent out about 2 months ago on a new gelatin pill, which is very much pharmaceutically oriented. So like a jelly bean type pill, and inside of that they believe they will be able to put medicine which will specifically target a part in your body. So that medicine will go specifically to that cell or that part that requires it and nowhere else. Or it'll be able to send a camera in to be able to send messages back, or it'll be able to send some kind of a test, so heartbeat or whatever else it's required to do, from inside your body to your doctors. Those sorts of things are literally on the cusp of medicine, and when we start to use them, we'll look back on what we do now and wonder how we managed with these antiquated systems that, of course, have served us so well for the last decades or 100 years.
Let's ask what the medical fraternity has to say about this. I mean, question one, how'd you get them back? There was a movie once, wasn't there, when a guy got shrunk and he went in a submarine to do something with his body. So that's, well, sort of what you're talking about. But what are you talking about, putting nanobots in our body, Morris? I mean, what do the docs have to, some scientists have to say about that?
So there are two types, Phil. There's the one that's disposable, and that just disappears. It just literally disappears. No one sees it again. And then there are those that come out in the natural course of what humans might do. And those are likely to be more the camera ones. Now, there are those two camps, and that's the way they're working. That's why this gelatin one was so interesting, because that's the one that dissolves. And they believe that within time, and again, technology becoming cheaper, all the things that we know have to happen before, that they'll be able to put cameras and all sorts of things in those little capsules as well. Of course, totally disposable, quite cheap, and that's the way they're headed. So doctors are...
So that means, Morris, that a lot of machines that we have now, the medical guys use, they will disappear.
Well, they'll shrink. I mean, they're literally like you just said in the movie. And in that movie, they actually had the full size. Remember, and they put a ray gun on them, and all of a sudden, everything, including the people inside that flying saucer type thing, shrunk, and they injected it into the body. Of course, we're not talking about shrinking it with one of those things, but everything that we have now will have to be somehow... shrunk down into something that's usable. We already are having pacemakers. There was a story in the media this week in Australia about pacemakers now that are, again, of course, put into the body, into the heart, to help the heart work. But the pacemaker is actually monitored externally by doctors, and the pacemaker itself has all the technology built into it. It's sending messages out constantly to medical teams. It's constantly adjusting itself according to conditions and what the person's doing. We're not that far from it. We're already on the cusp of it all.
All right, then, let's stay with medicine, Morris. I've read some articles in various places. I don't know if it's nonsense or not, but that teeth can regenerate and this, that, and the other. So if that's true, does that mean we're going to say goodbye to the dentist as we know him?
Well, we're not going to say goodbye to the dentist, but the dentist will certainly be using different things than they do now. I've seen, and this has been around for quite a while, though most people aren't readily aware of it, but when you need dentures, so when you're putting false teeth in of some kind, whether it's a crown or a one-off or a full set of dentures, it's not uncommon now for some of those companies to 3D print them. And I've actually seen that being done here. So they will take as they might do anyway for a normal set of dentures, which is an imprint of the teeth that have to come out, and then from those they'll build you a new set. So 3D printed teeth that are already on the horizon, already being used, will become more and more ordinary. And there's been a lot of conversation in the last couple of years about understanding why our teeth decay, what the issues are, and believing that they will be able to remedy, fix up the teeth that we have. So dentists are, or scientists working in that space, believe that the whole field of dentistry will in fact change dramatically over the next few decades, as will most of the other medicine.
I think a lot of people will be very happy about that. Go through the list for us, Maurice. What else haven't we got?
So I've talked about the fact that there's no traffic lights, speed limits or roundabouts, and in Hong Kong that would just be incredible because of the amount of traffic, I understand. And again, this is a conversation of 10, 15, 20 years down the track. But when we get to the point where we have our smart cities, which are roads that are able to speak, not speak obviously to us, but speak to technology, you know, how many people are going over them, what the conditions are, where there's potholes, where there's rain, when we have cars that are transmitting information back, as they already are, about where they're going, how fast they're going, how many people are on board, when that sort of information comes together, the city will begin to speak to each other, and this is what's called the smart city. And at that point, we believe that, not that we won't need traffic lights, but we will be able to change conditions so traffic flows are far more smooth than they are at the moment.
Traffic light design here is staggering. If you ever stop at a junction and just look around you, what's happening? I mean, I wouldn't know where to begin the logic of getting the right one in the right place. It's very, very common here to see these hugely sophisticated junctions.
And they are. I mean, we've absolutely come a long way because not that long ago, literally a decade ago, these were fairly static. They were put on a sequence or a timer, and that's how the traffic lights went, just regardless of who was using them. Now they're very much controlled by the traffic and a bit of technology and a whole lot of screens and a whole lot of people. But artificial intelligence is going to take over that role of figuring out what, where, how, what. And that's where most of the road traffic authorities are looking right now to bring in for the next 5-10 years.
All right, keep going.
So the other one I've talked about is the notion of not having to file tax returns anymore, that these things that we do after a period of time will not be part of our landscape anymore. Now, that doesn't mean we won't be filing tax returns. Unfortunately, we'll still be paying tax. We'll still have to go through all of those. But it means that, again, because most of the buying that we do, and I know you're going to ask about the cash economy, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
No, we've done that.
Yeah. But let's go down the road of, yes, most people are buying, or many people are buying digitally by credit cards, by whatever else they're using. There's a whole raft of information the tax department has already on you. What we're seeing in Australia is that they're giving us a form at the end of the year for some people which says, this is what we think you're entitled to. If you sign off, you're okay. And in America, they're using similar systems. Within a decade, that's going to be the default. It'll be the opt-out system you'll have otherwise.
You okay there, Marsh?
Yeah, I'm okay. Now, the other ones...
You're jolly good, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here. We're working along. We were talking before about medical as well. And the other one that is on the horizon that you and I have been speaking about for a number of years is organ transplants. Yeah. And that literally is just having its beginnings now. So it's been spoken about, it's been done in petri dishes, it's been and we've been able to do it with bones, which of course is not organs, but bones and more solid internal bits. But now we're literally at the cusp of being able to print kidneys and hearts. There's some really interesting work being done around kidneys at the moment, which are not fit for human use yet. But they are taking human cells from an existing kidney and they are able to grow very, very small ones. I mean, again, this is not meant for today. It's a 5, 10, 15 year horizon, but extremely promising with what they're able to do. And they're talking about being able to do the same with hearts and all sorts of other body parts. So again, a horizon point, I think 20 years from now, that will make transplants far more ordinary, far more accessible. So human body parts is definitely part of the tomorrow landscape we haven't seen a lot about.
there's another area that probably has to be developed there, because obviously when people have various things replaced in their body, sometimes the body violently rejects them.
They do, and we don't know enough about this because, of course, we haven't done it yet. But the notion behind this is that the implants are taken from the body itself. It's actually grown from your cells, from your internal organs. They may be able to harvest a piece of the decaying one and to grow it on top of that. So the belief is that what will be grown will automatically be accepted into your body because it will be of that body. But until we prove it, until we do it, we don't know. But that is definitely the thinking that they have.
Brilliant, Morris. Time to say goodbye. Can you just point our listeners to where you've obviously written all this up?
Yep. So as usual, it's businessfuturist.com.
Nice one, Morris. We'll do it again next week.
Yeah,
of course, as always, that is Morris Mizalowski on the line there from Melbourne.